Good day, good people. I am Brother Robert Farrell. Welcome to Contemplative Inner Being's Wisdom Wednesday. Wisdom Wednesday is recorded live on Crowdcast, and we invite all of our podcast and YouTube listeners to join us live each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central. That way you can be part of the dialogue and conversation that happens after our musings this evening. And whether you are here for the live session or you are watching the recording or listening to the recording, thank you so much for being here. For those here on Crowdcast, you will notice at the bottom of the screen a little green button there. You can join the Wisdom Wall, and that is a place where you can share what's on your heart this evening as you listen. And friends, what is wisdom? It isn't knowing more. It's knowing with more of you. It's knowing deeper. And Wisdom Wednesday is created as an invitation so that you can open to the depths of yourself, your intellect, your will, your emotion, your senses. Yes, open to the ground of wisdom, which is the transformation of human consciousness, transformation of the heart. Today we're going to encounter three brief wisdom contemplations. Each one will be followed by a minute of silence, where you're invited during that time to the spiritual practice of resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Resonate does something connect with you, and it might be symbolized by a single word or phrase that you hear. Reflect is to meditate with images and thoughts about what you heard. Or you may respond simply by journaling or prayer or movement. Or you can rest, simply be silent and open to the presence and action of divine love in your life. Then we will close by sharing a spiritual practice and have a group dialogue. And our theme today is the desert mystics, just as Archbishop Rowan Williams spoke about in the opening video. So with an open heart, a calm, centered presence, and gentle breath, let us open our hearts and listen. The prayer of quiet, the Trinity, divinization, universal restoration, and the importance of practice are some of the most neglected parts of the Western Church. And the desert Christians emphasized lifestyle practice, an alternative to empires and their economies. They offered alternatives to psychologically astute methods of prayer and a very simple spirituality of transformation into Christ. The desert communities, they actually grew out of informal gatherings of monastics and functioned much like families. And since the desert monks were often formally uneducated, they told stories, much as Jesus did, to teach about ego and love, virtue, surrender, peace, divine union, and inner freedom. Early Christianity set the foundation for what we would now call contemplation. And the desert mystics can be traced back to those 300 years after Jesus' execution. The desert form of Christianity is really a unique window into how Jesus was first understood. And that came before the church became imperial and highly organized and became a competitive religion. The fathers and mothers of the desert lived in the desert of Egypt, and they remind us of the importance of storytelling. listen to their stories and sayings. Meditating on them in silence and subsequently telling them to others. That's what helped our ancestors to live humanely, to be more human, and to remain truly alive. The stories from the Egyptian desert are part of our human heritage. They communicate eternal values and spiritual truth. Theirs is a silence of the deep heart and of intense prayer, a silence that cuts through centuries and cultures. We should stop to hear that heartbeat. The desert mystics and the Eastern Church Fathers taught what appears as a different Christianity. It's completely different from the issues that we are dealing with today. Their teachings on contemplation were clearly understood for centuries. And until the mind is freed from the multitudes of thoughts and has achieved the single simplicity of purity, it cannot experience spiritual knowledge. Attention is the beginning of contemplation, or rather its necessary condition, for through attention, God comes close and reveals herself to the mind. Attention is serenity of the mind, or rather it's standing firmly planted and not wandering through the gift of God's mercy. Some of the fathers called this doing silence of the heart. Others called it attention. Yet others, sobriety in opposition to thoughts. While others called it examining thoughts and guarding the mind. Collect your mind from its customary circling and wandering outside and quietly lead it into the heart by way of breathing. Friends, we get caught up in our thoughts. We are in the grip of a passion when that happens. We are no longer free. We have lost our freedom. And without this attentive, contemplative discipline, our mind is in a disorganized and dispersed state. The desert traditions, they reveal that contemplation, contemplative prayer, is not something new. So friends, let us take this into the silence and resonate, reflect, respond, rest. For too long, there has been little or no honor paid to those who have laid the foundations in Africa for the preservation of Christianity throughout the world. The trajectory of today's Christian contemplative practices can be traced to those early Christian communities in the Middle East and in Africa. People like Tertullian, Augustine, Cyprian, and others of African descent. And some of these communities were led by women. Here, many people retreated to remote desert areas to continue their spiritual quest. And this desert may seem initially barren, dull, and colorless, but eventually our perceptions start to change. In the desert, we empty ourselves of our own obstacles to God. In the space of this emptiness, we encounter the enormity of God's presence. The desert becomes the place of a mature repentance and conversion toward transformation into true radical freedom. And we are in need of those values central to African monasticism, including communal worships, communal relationships, humility, compassion, a mature mindfulness, a grounded sensitivity, and a very keen attention to one's inner world as well as the world in which one has journeyed. Each of us at some point in our lives find ourselves on the outskirts of society, listening to the desert coming from within. And during these times, that's when we realize that contemplation is a destination as well as a practice. The desert, this place of Lent, the desert is a symbol of both desertedness and God's presence. Anyone who experienced some form of loneliness, some form of brokenness, breakdown or breakup, aspects of desertedness, whether emotionally, physically, or socially, anyone that's had that will be able to make the necessary connections. It's true that each of us know times of drought, those dry and arid moments when we await refreshment and rain, when we wait for hope and life. And yet, the desert is not an empty region. It is a place that is full of action. It is a place that provides an opportunity and even a calling for divine vision. In the desert, that's where you are invited to shake off all forms of idolatry, all kinds of earthly limitations, in order to behold, or rather, to be held before, an image of the heavenly God. And there, in that place, then you are confronted with another reality. That reality is God's grace without any limits at all. Your very self is reflected in the dry desert, and you are obliged to face up to this self. Friends, the desert is a place of spiritual revolution, a place of inner protest, a place of deep encounter, a place of repentance. And living in the desert means living for God. Ironically, you don't have to find the desert in your life. It normally catches up with you in the form of some suffering or emptiness or breakdown or breakup or divorce or any kind of trauma that occurs in your life. And if we accept to go undergo this experience voluntarily, then it can prove both constructive and liberating. So let us pause here to move into the silence and take that opportunity to resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. May we stay faithful with whatever new life is being hatched within us. The universal human temptation is to miss our lives by living completely on the surface. So do not run from yourself. As the desert fathers and mothers taught, go to your cell and your cell will teach you everything. The cell is a sacred space, a place in which we can be with ourselves and the divine presence and listen. The cell is a place of divine encounter and of ongoing daily experience of being immersed in God's presence. And the wisdom of the desert, tempers our instinct to avoid boredom and discomfort. And one of the dilemmas of the spiritual life is that of coming to terms with the plain old ordinariness of spiritual practice and the life of prayer, of the whole of life becoming prayer. The result is that we don't allow ourselves the opportunity to bring forth new life. We miss the deeper life of the Spirit because we are constantly moving from one interest to another rather than focusing on one thing. As I often say, we are a mile wide and an inch deep. And when boredom threatens, it can very well be the outward and visible sign of God's secret, hidden inner work within the human heart and soul. And staying in the cell means noticing our appetite for overstimulation. The cell teaches us to slow down, to notice what is right in front of us, And by staying with ourselves, with our inner ups and downs, with our hurts and our fears, we will bring forth new life that God is creating within us. In In this time of Lent, we are offered and reminded that Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert. And this story is a beautiful telling of the demons we all have to face to grow up, to become mature. The main temptation we have to overcome is the doubting of our identity. The primary temptation we all face is to doubt our divine identity. And once we doubt that, it's all downhill from there. Certainly, we can all think of a thousand reasons to condemn ourselves. We face these common temptations. The first temptation is a temptation to be spectacular, to be American Idol, to be special, to be important, to be showy. We all want that. We all want to stand out. We want people to notice us. We want to be something special and do something special. Another temptation is to misuse religion by playing games with God. That's transactional religion as opposed to transformational religion. And a third temptation is the temptation to political power, where we often end up worshiping power to have power. Yet real religion is about transformation. Changing our mind toward love, changing our heart toward community, changing our body toward living in the present moment. Because religion is not about making more money, it's not about being famous, it's not about winning. And what religion at its most mature level means, thankfully we learn this from the desert, it means that there is one goal, there is one source, there is one focus, there is one meaning, and it is outside ourselves. So go into your cell and resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Your cell will teach you everything. Friends, thank you so much for your presence and your open receptivity to tonight's message. At this time, I'd like to share with you a spiritual practice. These are offerings. You can take them or leave them or incorporate them, or maybe you just want to put them in a little memory spot for later. And the practice I'd like to share with you just a little bit about this evening is chanting the Psalms. Cynthia Bourgeau, one of my teachers, has long embraced chanting the Psalms as a powerful embodied spiritual practice. And this practice first emerged from the desert monks of early Christianity. The usual pattern was to recite the Psalms from memory, of course, and then they would intersperse that with some simple work. And depending on the particular form of monastic organization, this solitary psalm oddity might be augmented by periodic community worship and other activities. And these early monks, they recited all 150 psalms during the course of a day, every day. And the spiritual practice was more or less a continuous recitation of the psalms during the waking hours. And reciting the psalms for them was almost as regular as breathing. Now, we know that the manner of this recitation most likely involved a form of chanting because of a very specific comment made by the desert father Evagrius. Quote, "It is a great thing to pray without distraction, but to chant psalms without distraction is even greater." And within these earliest monastic traditions, they formed the basis not only for celebration and proclamation, but for an entrance into contemplative prayer and the work of inner transformation by focusing the mind within the words of the psalm. Now, chanting is typically known throughout almost all of the major religious traditions as singing of maybe three or four short phrases over and over. In chanting the Psalms, it's basically just reading the psalm with a singing voice. It may be the same note throughout the whole psalm. There's no sheet music for you. You just pick whatever tone you would like to sing so that you have some vibrational energy, some embodied form to chant that psalm. So pick a psalm. You don't have to do all 150. Maybe you want to pick a short one and just recite it with a singing voice, maybe a single note. Maybe two or three notes. That's all you need. And that's our practice for this evening. And this is the place in the evening where we say goodnight to our podcast and YouTube listeners. And we invite you to come be part of the live session and crowdcast so that you can enter into the dialogue that happens next. And we remind everyone that love is the way, and that you are love. So friends, stay awesome and be love. We look forward to seeing you again soon.